a que la OPEP aumente su producción, pero solo en un 50%, lo que no habría tenido mayor efecto en la tendencia inflacionaria del crudo.
Entre tanto, en el Reino Unido, la reina Isabel II, de 96 años y con crecientes problemas de movilidad, fue aclamada el jueves al aparecer en el balcón del Palacio de Buckingham por una inmensa multitud reunida para celebrar sus 70 años de reinado.
Este evento en Londres marcó el inicio de las celebraciones que culminan hoy domingo y que se extendieron por todo el país y también por los integrantes de la Commonwealth, como es el caso de Canadá.
Vestida con abrigo y sombrero azul, la monarca se mantuvo sonriente y de pie, pero apoyándose en un bastón junto a su primo, el duque de Kent, coronel de la Guardia Escocesa, mientras 1.500 soldados desfilaban frente al palacio en el primer día de su jubileo de platino.
El desfile militar con músicos y caballos forma parte de una tradición que se remonta a hace más de 2 siglos. El evento culmina con la aparición de la familia real en el balcón del palacio para saludar a la multitud y ver un pase aéreo de aviones militares que en formación marcaron el número 70.
En cuanto a su extensión fuera de Londres, se encendieron más de 2.800 pebeteros o incensarios en todo el Reino Unido, incluidas las cuatro cimas más altas del país, así como en las islas del Canal de la Mancha, la isla de Man, en el mar de Irlanda, los territorios británicos de ultramar y 54 ciudades de la Commonwealth, incluyendo aquí, en este país.
Tanta actividad, sin embargo, parece que agotó a la reina, que se vio obligada a faltar a la misa de acción de gracias que se celebró el viernes en la Catedral de San Pablo.
Esto ha aumentado las especulaciones acerca del futuro inmediato de la monarca, especialmente si se pondría en vigencia la ley de regencia promulgada oficialmente en 1937, que especifica quién reemplazará a un monarca cuando no puede cumplir con sus funciones.
Según el biógrafo real Clive Irving, la reina Isabel probablemente dejaría su cargo después del jubileo de platino y nombraría a su hijo Carlos como rey.
A principios de este año, la monarca declaró su sincero deseo de que Camilla Parker Bowles, esposa del príncipe, fuera nombrada reina consorte una vez que Carlos ascendiera al trono.
Y yendo ahora a un tema muy diferente y en cierto modo la noticia curiosa de esta semana, Turquía será conocida como Turquía en las Naciones Unidas a partir de ahora, tras aceptar una petición formal de Ankara.
Se pedirá a varios organismos internacionales que realicen el cambio de nombre como parte de una campaña de cambio de marca lanzada por el presidente turco a finales del año pasado.
Turquía es la representación y expresión de la cultura, la civilización y los valores del pueblo turco, había dicho Recep Tayyip Erdogan en diciembre. La cadena estatal TRT se apresuró a realizar el cambio en cuanto se anunció el año pasado, explicando que entre las razones para el cambio de imagen estaba la asociación con el pavo, nombre inglés del ave tradicionalmente asociada a la Navidad, el Año Nuevo o el Día de Acción de Gracias.
También señaló la definición del diccionario de inglés de Cambridge de una de las acepciones de la palabra como algo que anda mal o una persona estúpida o tonta.
Naturalmente, el cambio de nombre solo se refiere a su versión en inglés, que es la que se usa para oficializar los nombres de los países en la ONU. En español, seguirá siendo Turquía.
Y a continuación vamos a un nuevo segmento musical.
Thank you.
de oro. Solo buscando ese corazón, me hago viejo.
Y ahora vamos a lo que ha ocurrido en este país durante esta semana.
El gobierno federal autorizó de manera temporal y a modo de procedimiento experimental la legalización de la posesión de drogas duras para consumo personal solo en áreas designadas de la ciudad de Vancouver, en Columbia Británica.
Esa ciudad ha tenido en los últimos años una alta incidencia de muertes por sobredosis y la medida será monitoreada atentamente tanto por la policía como por las agencias sociales locales.
El anuncio fue hecho por el Ministerio de Salud Mental y Adicciones, el que también anunció que similares programas podrían adoptarse en otras áreas urbanas en Toronto, Montreal y Edmonton, donde también el tema de la adicción está presente, aunque no tanto como en Vancouver.
Sin embargo, una moción presentada por el MPD en la Cámara de los Comunes para aplicar el programa a nivel nacional fue rechazado por la mayoría de los diputados.
En otro orden de cosas, el gobierno del primer ministro Justin Trudeau defendió el fuerte aumento del número de órdenes secretas en el Consejo de Gabinete durante su mandato, diciendo que tenía la obligación de proteger la seguridad nacional.
El diputado conservador Luc Berthold inició el turno de preguntas el jueves citando la promesa de Trudeau en el 2015 de dirigir un gobierno transparente.
Acabamos de conocer la existencia de 72 órdenes secretas del Consejo. ¿Por qué los liberales tienen tanto miedo de decir la verdad, toda la verdad y nada más que la verdad? Preguntó el parlamentario opositor.
El ministro de Industria, François-Philippe Champagne, respondió diciendo que el gobierno cree en la transparencia, pero que no siempre puede revelar todo.
Creo que todos los canadienses que nos están viendo hoy entienden que nuestro gobierno siempre ha dado muestras de transparencia, pero como explico a mis colegas del otro lado, también tenemos la responsabilidad como gobierno de garantizar la seguridad nacional, dijo Champagne en la Cámara de los Comunes.
Dijo además que algunas decisiones relacionadas con las operaciones de inversión extranjera se mantienen en secreto por el interés nacional.
El gobierno ha sido objeto de críticas de la oposición tras un informe de CBC News, según el cual el gobierno de Trudeau ha adoptado 72 órdenes del Consejo secretas.
Mientras que los liberales criticaron a los conservadores en 2015 por el número de órdenes secretas que habían adoptado en 9 años, el gobierno de Trudeau ha adoptado más del doble en sus 6 años de mandato.
La revelación ha suscitado peticiones de la oposición para que el gobierno sea más transparente sobre las órdenes secretas en Consejo que ha adoptado y preguntas sobre por qué ha habido tal aumento en su uso.
Entre tanto, en nuestra vecina provincia de Ontario, este jueves se efectuaron elecciones para renovar el gobierno y los conservadores liderados por Doug Ford se alzaron con un fácil y contundente victoria, manteniendo su mayoría absoluta e incluso aumentando el número de diputados en el Parlamento provincial.
Los conservadores lograron elegir 83 diputados, en tanto que el nuevo Partido Democrático obtuvo 31, el Partido Liberal 8, el Partido Verde 1 y un independiente.
Aunque el nuevo Partido Democrático mantuvo su condición de oposición oficial, su líder, Andrea Howard, anunció esa misma noche de la elección que era tiempo de pasar la antorcha a otra persona.
El líder del Partido Liberal, Stephen De Luca, que ni siquiera logró salvar su propio escaño, también anunció su dimisión.
Y en nuestra provincia, el premier ha prometido a los quebequenses otro cheque para compensar la inflación si vuelve a ser elegido, algo que provocó inmediatas reacciones.
François Legault, hablando en la Asamblea Nacional el martes, dijo que la provincia había subestimado el impacto de la inflación en los gastos diarios.
El gobierno de la CAC concedió recientemente $500 a todos los quebequenses que presentaron su declaración de la renta y que ganan menos de $100,000 anuales. Ahora habría un suplemento a esa suma. A finales del año 2022 enviaremos un nuevo cheque. Si somos elegidos, obviamente, añadió Legault, quien no especificó si el cheque sería de $500 o de otra cantidad.
La declaración fue recibida con abucheos por parte de los políticos de la oposición en la legislatura, que dijeron que la medida era poco más que una estratagema electoral.
Así que está comprando votos, vaya, dijo Martin Gay, diputado liberal de Quebec, por el distrito de La Fontaine. François Legault cree que puede comprar votos. Tanguet dijo que esa no es la visión de la provincia que, en su opinión, quiere la mayoría de los quebequenses.
El coportavoz de Quebec Solidaire, Gabriel Nadeau-Dubois, preguntó por qué el gobierno no hace más por resolver los problemas de fondo que presionan el bolsillo de los quebequenses.
Legault está tratando la crisis del costo de la vida como si se tratara de baches. Solo está parchando agujeros, dijo Nadodúa.
Y vamos ahora a un nuevo tema musical.
Pobrecita golondrina que aventura por los mares del champán y del dolor. Pobre piedra peregrina que rodando por el mundo va detrás de un nuevo sol. Lleva el rostro avejentado por el peso de las noches tenebrosas del alcohol. ¿Quién pudiera a ti salvarte, avecilla trashumante, peregrina sin amor? Cada día, cada noche, saboreando nuevos besos que te hagan olvidar el desvío de tu camino, esa culpa de tu sino que de negro te vistió. Pobrecita golondrina que aventura por los mares del champán y del dolor. ¿Quién pudiera a ti salvarte, avecilla trashumante, peregrina sin amor? Cada día, cada noche, saboreando nuevos besos que te hagan olvidar el desvío de tu camino, esa culpa de tu sino que de negro te vistió. Pobrecita golondrina que aventura por los mares del champán y del dolor. ¿Quién pudiera aquí salvarte, avecilla trashumante, peregrina sin amor? ¿Quién pudiera aquí salvarte, avecilla trashumante, peregrina sin amor?
La revista de la semana. Gustavo Petro triunfa en primera vuelta en Colombia, pero una dura contienda le espera para la segunda vuelta. Como se esperaba, Gustavo Petro, el candidato de la coalición izquierdista Pacto Histórico, obtuvo la primera mayoría en las elecciones presidenciales realizadas el pasado domingo en Colombia. Con un 40.52% de las preferencias, Petro, sin embargo, no logró superar la barrera del 50% más uno y, como también se anticipaba, deberá disputar la presidencia en una segunda vuelta el domingo 19 de junio. Su contendor será el independiente de derecha, Rodolfo Hernández, abanderado de la Liga de Gobernantes Anticorrupción, quien obtuvo el 28% de los votos, ubicándose en segundo lugar y desplazando al candidato oficialista Federico Gutiérrez, que alcanzó el 24% de apoyo. De alguna manera se puede decir que el gran derrotado en estos comicios fue el uribismo, esa variante de la derecha colombiana que responde al liderazgo del expresidente Álvaro Uribe y que en la actualidad gobierna con Iván Duque. En su lugar se situó en el segundo puesto de las preferencias un hombre como Rodolfo Hernández, cuyas declaraciones han dado mucho que hablar por sus exabruptos de carácter muy machista. Algunas de sus intervenciones le han significado ser comparado con Donald Trump por su discurso populista de derecha, con respuestas simples a temas complejos, pero que al parecer lograron tener eco en una población sacudida por décadas de violencia, corrupción en los altos círculos del gobierno y, más recientemente, los efectos de la crisis migratoria, la pandemia y, en estos días, una inflación desatada que ha provocado fuertes protestas. En este contexto, el electorado colombiano ha dicho que ya no quiere más de lo mismo y por eso dio la primera mayoría a un abanderado de izquierda, un hecho inédito en la historia del país. Del mismo modo, el apoyo a un candidato como Hernández indica que en los sectores conservadores hay también una búsqueda de fórmulas diferentes. En ese sentido, el populismo de Hernández y sobre todo su consigna contra la corrupción, sin duda, ha resonado bien en muchos sectores, especialmente en la clase media, que tiende a ser más susceptible a este tipo de discurso. Nótese, sin embargo, que la candidatura de Hernández, a pesar de su discurso populista, no aborda las causas centrales de la crítica situación colombiana. Lo que sí hace, especialmente con su referencia a la corrupción, es apuntar a lo que es más un síntoma de la crisis que sus verdaderas causas. En este sentido, la propuesta de Petro, que dirige sus dardos, más bien dicho, al modelo económico neoliberal y a las desigualdades que genera, es mucho más consistente y si llegara a imperar una visión racional, más que los enfoques superficiales que ofrece Hernández, sería el candidato izquierdista el que estaría en mejores condiciones de enfrentar la crisis por la que atraviesa el país. Sin embargo, ello va a requerir un gran esfuerzo en la campaña, sobre todo considerando que Hernández ya cuenta, desde la noche misma de la elección, con el apoyo que le ofreció el candidato derechista derrotado, Federico Fico Gutiérrez. En términos estrictamente numéricos, ese apoyo le daría mayoría a Hernández, y de hecho las primeras encuestas emitidas esta semana le daban una leve ventaja por sobre Petro. Pero, sin embargo, hay que considerar que para el candidato izquierdista, si bien es lo que se puede considerar una pelea cuesta arriba, por otro lado, la dinámica de la segunda vuelta tendrá otras características muy diferentes a la primera. Petro aún puede contar con los votos de los candidatos de centro. También puede ser importante que una amplia masa de votantes que no concurrió en la primera vuelta pueda hacerlo el 19 de junio, y esos electores son una incógnita que, dependiendo de cuán eficaz sea la estrategia de su campaña, puede inclinar la balanza a favor de Petro. Para Colombia, las dos semanas que quedan para la segunda vuelta serán también de gran significado, pues se definirá si seguir por el camino conocido de modelo económico neoliberal con los resultados de desigualdad e injusticia social que ha traído a su población, aun cuando ahora se lo presente como una propuesta hecha por un hombre no involucrado en las anteriores administraciones de los partidos de derecha, o si se deberá tomar el camino de los cambios profundos que la sociedad colombiana requiere, que es el proyecto que encarna entonces la candidatura de Petro y el pacto histórico. The Weekly Review. Gustavo Petro triumphs in first round in Colombia, but a tough race awaits for the runoff election. As expected, Gustavo Petro, the candidate of the leftist coalition Pacto Histórico, obtained the first majority in the presidential elections held last Sunday in Colombia. With 40.52% of the preferences, Petro, however, did not manage to overcome the 50% plus one barrier. And as also anticipated, he will have to dispute the presidency in a second round on Sunday, June 19th. His contender will be the right-wing independent Rodolfo Hernández, standard bearer of the League of Anti-Corruption Rulers, who obtained 28% of the votes, placing him in second place and displacing the official candidate Federico Gutiérrez, who obtained 24% of support. In a way, it can be said that the great defeated in these elections was Uribismo, that variant of the Colombian right wing that respond to the leadership of former President Álvaro Uribe and that currently governs with Iván Duque. In his place, a man like Rodolfo Hernández, whose statements have raised eyebrows because of his outburst of male chauvinism, came in second place. Some of his interventions have led him to be compared to Donald Trump for his right-wing populist discourse, with simple answers to complex issues, but which apparently managed to resonate in a population shaken by decades of violence, corruption in government circles, and more recently, the effects of the migratory crisis, the pandemic, and these days, an unleashed inflation that has produced strong protest. In this context, the Colombian electorate has said it does not want more of the same, and therefore gave the first majority to a leftist standard bearer, an unprecedented event in the country's history. Likewise, the support to a candidate such as Hernández indicates that in the conservative sectors there is also a search for different formulas. In this sense, Hernández's populism, and especially his slogan against corruption, has undoubtedly resonated well in some sectors, especially in the middle class, which tend to be more susceptible to this type of discourse. Note, however, that Hernández's candidacy, despite his populist discourse, does not address the central causes of Colombia's critical situation. What he does do, especially with his reference to corruption, is to point to what is more a symptom of the crisis rather than its true causes. In this sense, Petro's proposal, which directs his darts at the neoliberal economic model and the inequalities it generates, is much more consistent, and if a rational vision were to prevail, rather than the superficial approaches offered by Hernández, the leftist candidate will be in a better position to face the crisis the country is going through. However, this will require a great effort in the campaign, especially considering that Hernández already counts, since the very night of the election, with the support offered by the defeated right-wing candidate Federico Fico Gutiérrez. In strictly numerical terms, that support will give Hernández a majority, and in fact, the first polls issued this week gave him a slight advantage over Petro. For the leftist candidate, although it is what can be considered an uphill fight, on the other hand, the dynamics of the second round campaign will have other characteristics. Petro can still count on the votes of the centrist candidates But it may also be important that a large mass of voters who did not turn out in the first round can do so on June 19th. And those voters are an unknown that, depending on how effective his campaign strategy is, may tip the balance in his favor. For Colombia, the 2 weeks remaining for the second round will also be of great significance, since it will be defined whether to continue along the known path of the neoliberal economic model with the results of inequality and social injustice it has brought to its population, even if it is now presented as a proposal made by a man not involved in the previous administration of the right-wing parties, or whether to take the path of the deep changes that Colombian society requires, which is the project embodied by Petro and the Historical Pact Coalition. Good day.
Soy el gobierno legal por el pueblo establecido, hijo del pueblo he nacido, pueblo mío, pueblo ancestral. Al pueblo tengo de aval para todas mis funciones, el pueblo en mis decisiones, el pueblo en mis documentos, pueblo en discursos y eventos, pueblo de mis elecciones. Soy el pueblo y hablo tosco, gobierno, ¿qué pasará? Dices que soy tu papá y casi ni te conozco. Yo no soy un San Juan Bosco, ni soy la Biblia sagrada. Soy pura plebe pelada, gobierno, ¿y qué te has creído? Yo siempre te he conocido como hijo de la tostada. Pueblo mío, mi pueblo amado, soy tu hijo y tu servidor, el policía, el senador, el líder, el diputado, el ejército, el soldado son para tu protección. Tú eres mi única razón y lo que me hace valer. Pueblo mío, tú eres el ser y esencia de la nación.
Anda y haz tonta tu tía, yo recibo y sobran casos del soldado culatazos, mordidas del policía, del diputado falsía y del judicial bribón, patadas y vejación. Oye, gobierno canijo, si dices que tú eres mi hijo, no te portes tan bribón.
Yo sé bien que me critican, pero no es cuestión de tranzas. Ocupado en tus finanzas, no veo si te perjudican. Sé que algunos te trafican, coyotes intermediarios, bancos, líderes agrarios, pero en bien de la nación. Pueblo, todos esos son leves males necesarios.
¿Cuáles males necesarios? ¿Qué finanzas ni qué nada? Contigo se hacen manada, tranzas y permisionarios. Los compromisos bancarios te traen hecho un desencuadre. Pero aunque hoy nadie te ladre, con la crisis y las penas, un día que no esté de buenas te voy a partir la moder.
Pueblo mío dicharachero, paso y te debo decir, vergüenza hasta conseguir préstamos del extranjero. Necesitamos dinero, dólares frescos, mi amor, para el agroexportador, la industria y el desarrollo. Y ando detrás de ese apoyo, aunque me cause.
I'm David Bochner of Guelph, Ontario, and I get my weekly radio news on the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Welcome, everyone, to the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. My name is Sheldon. I am here with Jill, and we thank you for joining us. It is our 30 minutes spent with you every week with news and information from the world of radio. We can be reached by email. RadioReport@yahoo.com is our email address. We are live streaming and archived at ckut.ca on the web. Our Facebook group, International Radio Report. We are welcoming Walter and Isaac to the group. This brings us to 789 members. We hope if you're not already a member of our Facebook group that you'll take the time to go and join. Lots of great information on the group page for you. And if you'd like to listen to the show at your convenience, you go to our YouTube channel, International Radio Report, where we have 655 subscribers. And you can listen to the current show and back shows as far back as we have them. If you missed a show or want to, you know, recap something you missed, you can do that there. So lots of ways to track us down, both on the radio and on the internet. We are going to start off today's show with a couple somewhat related stories and following up on a local story we talked about last week on the show.
Yep. And so we were talking about the Francophone radio scene in Montreal, and especially a station which is very popular, 98.5 FM. And we were talking about the people that are being either pushed away or some of them taking their retirements. Interesting, as there's an article in La Presse where they were talking about they are replacing a lot of the men by women now. You know, we're 50% men and 50% women, so it doesn't reflect on the radio. And radio's been traditionally, when we think about it, very masculine. There were not a lot of women in radio in the past. It was pretty much always man voices we'd hear. And so now they're doing a change, and the director general of 98.5 said that maybe it's time for more women on the air. Maybe this is the time to make things a little more fair so that there is as many women at least as men. And so they're taking that turn. So this is kind of an interesting change. And, you know, how many times we've heard, and with what happened also that we talked last week about Q107, we often hear, you know, that certain areas are kind of, you know, men's club, or it's just not fair sometimes for women. And it's like the boys club is there and they're just controlling everything. And maybe that's a sign of the times that, well, time is over now. And let's have women on the air also, and have a different viewpoint at the same time often.
Yeah, I think we heard less women on talk radio stations as well. Yep. You know, you'd have them like in morning shows and whatever. They were often sort of secondary roles. You know, they were doing the traffic or the weather or something like that. But we're seeing that more and more where they're, you know, they're either the host or an actual co-host of a show where they're, you know, sort of on an equal level. It always brings to mind, though, the salaries. Yeah. Are the salaries going to be on an equal level? That we don't really know. Yeah. What goes on inside the boardrooms, but be interesting to see. Also, we talked last week about some of the older, probably more expensive announcers that are sort of being phased out. And you kind of wonder if they're bringing in new people, which is great, but are those new people being brought in for financial reasons? You know, that's always sort of in the background.
Yeah, that's possible. And it's, you know, kind of difficult to really know, you know, how can you check that your salary is fair? Because there's so many variables that they're going to get with, oh, well, you know, there's experience. And one other interesting story about 98.5, there's a guy that is called Bernard Drainville. So this guy went into politics. Well, actually, further back, he was on the CBC French TV news. Often he was one of the reporters, one of the journalists. And he got into politics, left the CBC, then, of course, lost at some point in further elections later on. Decided to go back to media, and he ended up on 98.5. And apparently his show is extremely popular, and more popular. Now, very interesting, he is going back to politics with a different political party, but he's leaving a position where one of the journalists at La Presse called Paul Journet says that he's actually giving away more than $1 million for 3 years that the contract that he had with 98.5. That's a lot of money to let go in order to go to politics. Hope it works out for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a risk. You never know if you're going to get elected. If you're not elected, are you going to be able to come back? Are you going to come back on the same terms? Are they going to want you back? It's a bit of a gamble, that's for sure. And, you know, he's been in politics for quite a long time previously. We were discussing before the show that, you know, he's probably already making a government pension.
Yep.
And I'm not sure what the rules are that if you go back into politics, do you stop getting that pension? Mm-hmm. So if he does, you know, then, you know, you got to start wondering where the money's going to come from. But yeah, it would be interesting if he makes that move back to politics and he doesn't win his riding, then what? Will they welcome him back or not? So anyways, we thank Norma Martel, who keeps an ear out on the French yep. media here in Montreal for us for passing along that story just this morning, actually, where the news broke about Bernard Dranville.
Yep.
We go next to the United States, a report from Adrian Kosh in the Wilson Report. Radio messages reaching Ukraine from Lebanon, Tennessee. WTWW, which if you're a shortwave listener, you're probably familiar with, an international shortwave radio station based in Lebanon, Tennessee, wants its listeners to help people in Ukraine who have been attacked by the Russian military since February. The radio station is broadcasting messages of encouragement to the people of Ukraine, where WTWW comes in as a local station. The station management is asking people to call their toll-free number and leave a message of hope and encouragement. Nearly 400 people have recorded messages from all over the world, even including one from a listener in Egypt. Each message plays continuously, rotating for months. WTWW's operator Ted Randall said, "We are doing this to put people of Ukraine in a better set of mind. They need encouragement and cheering up during this hard time. They take us on portable radios into the shelters, and that's what they are listening on." Randall and his wife Holly are able to do this from the comfort of their home. They can reach thousands of people overseas with shortwave radio. While shortwave radio isn't common in the U.S., it's how many people are able to listen to the radio overseas. The Randall's 100,000-watt transmitter site, located about 25 minutes from their house, is how they reach Ukraine and Russia. The station has a stronger signal than the BBC station. "We have received responses through Facebook Messenger from several Ukrainians and emails from Russia thanking us for what we're doing. However, once Russian President Vladimir Putin threatened prison time for anyone communicating with other countries about the war, they haven't received any more messages from Russia." They broadcast on three stations, or three frequencies, actually. 5085 is upbeat and plays classic rock music. 9475 is religious programming. And 9940 kilohertz is the voice of freedom and plays the messages people have recorded.
9940 has been very strong here, too, if you listen to it. They rarely ID as WTWW. I noticed they most of the time ID with Voice of Freedom. So if you hear Voice of Freedom on 9940, it is WTWW. And I think it's, you know, a nice way to try to keep the spirits up for the Ukrainian people and even for Russians that might not agree with what's happening right now. So we talked about the Voice of Greece in the past. We were talking about how they could leave shortwave. It's still not set whether or not they're going to leave, but they got another extension. So they had the first extension that went up to May the 31st, 2022, and now they are getting another extension. This is from Glenn Hauser. "The operation of the Avlida Shortwave Broadcast Center took a second extension following a suggestion by the General Director of Technology and Media Operations of ERT, but also a request from the Ministry of Defense. The Voice of Greece will continue to broadcast proportionally at least until June 15th, when the conditions will be re-evaluated. At the same time, with another decision, ERT concluded an agreement with OTE, SAT Maritel, a subsidiary of the OTE group concerning telecommunications and shipping, for transmission of a six-hour program by the Voice of Greece in order to improve access to information or entertainment for Greek sailors. And by the way, a lot of people are asking, where are they if they're still on the air? Because they used to be very good and very loud in North America on 94.20 in the evening. They have a reduced schedule. So they kind of end at 17, 18 UTC, which of course is not favorable for us here. But if you're in Europe, you should hear them on 94.20 kilohertz.
You know, that's interesting that they're addressing the Greek sailing fleet.
Yep.
You know, this is an issue that's come up before, where you know the station, the when they're out on the high seas, there's a good chance that they might be out of range of domestic broadcasting.
Definitely,
this is where shortwave can certainly fill a gap for them. So, another reason for trying to retain some shortwave broadcasting for special circumstances like that.
And we've got a news by Justin Spike by AP News about a radio station that elevates voices of Hungary's Roma minority. Intellectuals, broadcasters, and cultural figures from Hungary's Roma community are using the airwaves to reframe narratives and elevate the voices of the country's largest minority group. Radio Dih, a Romani word that means to see, has broadcast since January on FM radio in Hungary's capital, Budapest. Its 11 programs focus on Roma music, culture, and the issues faced by the community, and aim to recast the way the often disadvantaged minority group is perceived by broader society. Roma people in general don't have enough representation in the mainstream media, and even if they do, it's oftentimes not showing the right picture or the picture that is true to the Roma community, says Bettina Poxai, co-host of a show that focuses on social issues. The radio station, she said, aims to give a voice to Roma people and make sure that our voice is also present in the media and that it shows a picture that we are satisfied with. Some estimates suggest that Roma in Hungary number nearly 1 million, or around 10% of the population. Like their counterparts throughout Europe, many of the Hungary's Roma are often the subjects of social and economic exclusion and face discrimination, segregation, and poverty. Adding to their marginalization are stereotypes about Roma roles in society, where they are often associated with their traditional occupations as musicians, dancers, traders, and craftspeople that go back centuries. These expectations have limited the opportunities for Roma people, especially Roma women, to participate and develop their skills in other fields, says Sandi Minzari, host of a women's radio program. We are stereotyped by the majority because they tend to believe that we are very good at singing, dancing, speaking about girly subjects and raising the kids, and that's us, but it's much more. Programming specifically for women runs for 2 hours every day, and our show Zashez, which means Let's Go Girls in the Romani language, focuses on current events and global topics like climate change and other social issues. Many women in traditional Roma families are highly dependent on male family members, and including them in the conversation about topics of public interest is meant to serve as an inspiration for them to engage with a different world. We find it very important to speak about heavy subjects because we are much more than speaking about nail polish, hairdos, and Botox, she said, adding that she would like female listeners to come to the conclusion that the problem is not me. I want more from life, and these girls are doing it, and I can do the same. The station's motto about Roma, not just for Roma, reflects the conviction of the hosts that the station can act as a bridge between Roma and non-Roma Hungarians and can break narratives that tend to associate their community with poverty and other social problems. In addition to co-hosting her own show, Poxai in her free time guides informative tours in Budapest that aim to correct misconceptions about Roma people to both Hungarians and foreign tourists in the city's 8th district, which has a high concentration of Roma residents. She gave a presentation to a group of visitors from the United States. In introducing the Roma's more than 600-year history in Hungary, in challenging preconceptions, she said she aimed to make sure that future generations of Hungarian Roma will not have to go through the challenges she faced as a child. I want to change how Roma people are viewed in society. I want to make sure that there is enough light on the values that Roma community provided through history to the non-Roma society. And this is nice. And I think, you know, we have that in many countries around the world where we sometimes might need a voice, a radio voice that talks about a minority that, you know, sometimes people have their own judgments that are not necessarily right. And I think it's a great idea to educate through radio.
Yep, it's a good way to reach the masses, you know, to get specialized programming for specialized groups and groups that aren't, as you say, often getting the media attention that they probably deserve. So yep. Station's probably online. Of course, it's going to be in the Romani language, which unless you speak it, it's going to be difficult to follow the programming. But you might like to tune in and listen to some of the music and what have you.
Yep.
So we'll post up the story and I'll see if I can find a link to the station as well, where you might be able to go and take a listen to it. Or you could always go on an online receiver and check it out in Hungary as well.
So what's happening with our sun? Well, it's quieted down a little this week. There are still quite a few sunspot groups. Actually, sunspot number is 59. But definitely things were a little different. And it showed on the bands. We could see that the higher frequencies were not as good as they were in the past few weeks when solar activity really shot up. The solar flux for the first time a couple of days this week went just below 100, and we hope that it's going to actually get back above. There is a sunspot, a pretty big sunspot group that apparently is behind the sun that might actually rotate into view this week, so this could change. And of course, propagation is good. There's no coronal holes right now that will actually send solar winds, so conditions should stay pretty nice. And I had quite a few contacts on my ham radio with a few countries, Russia and England, quite a few surprises on 20 meters. It was pretty good, even though the solar flux was down. So you know what? If you really want to know how propagation is, you got to turn on that radio and listen.
This is Jeff Eichner of Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania, United States of America. Listen to the International Radio Report every Sunday morning at 10:30 on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
We go next to a little bit of a lighthearted story. I got quite a good laugh out of this one. Maybe some of you have had the same experiences in your own home. It comes from Mike Cooper via Glenhauser's World of Radio out of the Washington Post. The headline, an annoyed radio listener reports that Alexa is awoken by mistake. Ray Lum lives in Arlington, where he uses his Amazon Alexa to listen to music, get weather updates, and to pester with such questions as, where does the light go when you turn off the switch? What Ray doesn't do is use Alexa to listen to the news on his favorite station, WTOP. For that, he utilizes a technology that would be familiar to Marconi if the late Italian inventor was somehow reanimated and dropped into Ray's kitchen. Ray turns on the radio in his breakfast nook. However, there's a promotional ad that runs on his favorite station, WTOP, in which a voice proclaims, quote, we know you're listening to WTOP for the latest news, traffic, and weather on your commute. But what about when you're at home? Listen to WTOP on your smart speaker. It's easy. Just say, Alexa, open WTOP. Or, OK, Google, play WTOP. Well, when those magic words issue forth from Ray's kitchen radio, that's exactly what happens. The two smart speakers in his other rooms spring to life, broadcasting WTOP. That's when I have to go out to the living room and dining room to deactivate my smart speakers, Ray said. It's a minor irritation, but it still bothers me. So you want to live with new technology? You're going to have to live with some of the circumstances that go along with it.
Oh, yeah. With all the shows that I listen to, including tech shows, I don't know how many times it happened that, you know, they mention the magic words and the device just starts and you're like, whoops, that's not what I wanted.
Yeah, you have to remember that Google or Alexa is always listening. You know, it can just be a casual conversation. And, you know, words like their names, Google or Alexa, might pop up in your conversation and it's listening and may try to do something for you, whether you want it to or not.
Probably a lot of devices started in this show today.
Exactly. That's quite possible, as we said the magic words. So if you suddenly start hearing WTOP coming in out of your house somewhere, go check your smart speaker, because you might be listening to a Washington area radio station. Now, we have one message that's come in. We talked a number of weeks back about the Voice of Mongolia being rebroadcast via WRMI in Miami. Lots of people wrote. Gilles, I think you got one of the early QSLs from them.
Yep, I got a QSL, and no wonder they might want to save money, because they actually sent it by registered mail. I had to go and sign for it.
Yeah, that's, you don't see that often from a radio station. Well, now there is a message regarding the QSLs from the Voice of Mongolia. This is via Alan Rowe in Teddington in the UK. The Voice of Mongolia posted the following message on Facebook on May the 26th, which may be of interest to particularly QSL hunters. Dear Voice of Mongolia listeners, greetings from the English section of VOM Radio. We are ready to send the verification letters to our listeners who sent us reports in May 2022. In this regard, a statement needs to be made. We will send the verification letter to our listeners who have submitted reports at least 3 times in 1 month. The reason why is the items such as postcards, stamps, etc. are limited. So please note that it is difficult for us to respond to anyone who sent a report once every few months. Therefore, we want you to be more active. Then we will write back to you as our active listeners. We would also be happy if you could write a more detailed report. Also, if you write down the question you want to ask, we will always be ready to answer it on the mailbag program, which airs on every Monday's broadcast. Please keep listening to us and be an active listener. Signed, the mailbox editor of the Voice of Mongolia. So I don't think that's a lot to ask of their listeners.
How many times do we say it? You want to keep stations on the air, be active, let them know that you're listening. And you know what? It's not because you're writing to a station that you absolutely have to ask for a QSL also. You know, I mean, they're doing it. They don't have to if they don't want to. But here they're, you know, nice enough to do it. They're just asking for a little more details in what you're listening, what you like. And they just want a little more reports before they're going to send you that QSL. And I think that is fine. That is actually a good idea.
I think they realize now they've got a, you know, a potentially large audience out there that probably wouldn't have heard them before with the station being relayed by WRMI. So they definitely want some input. New people listening to the program, you must have something to say, you know, other than send me a QSL letter or a QSL card. If you do want that, you're going to have to work at it a little bit and be a little more interactive with the radio station in Mongolia.
There's actually good news with this news item. It's the fact that if they are doing that, maybe there's a lot more people than we think that are actually writing in. So this is nice.
Yeah.
So there's some upcoming ham radio contests.
Yeah, it's a busy weekend coming up next weekend. If you're a ham radio operator or like to tune in as a listener to the ham contests that are going on. So first off, we have the VK Shires Contest, 0100 to 2359 Zulu on June the 11th. It's organized by the Wireless Institute of Australia. Its bands are 160 through 10 meters. And they want you to note that there is a special DX window on 75 meters permitted for Australian ham operators. The contest will be in single sideband and CW.
There's the Asia Pacific Sprint single sideband, 11 Zulu to 13 Zulu, June 11th, organized by the Asia Pacific Sprint Committee. The objective for stations outside of the Asia Pacific region to work as many Asia Pacific stations as possible within the 2-hour time limit, and for stations inside the Asia Pacific region to work as many stations as possible anywhere in the world within the 2-hour limit. Bands are 15 and 20, and it's SSB.
We have the Portugal Day contest coming up, 1200 Zulu June 11th to 1200 Zulu June 12th. It's organized by the Rede do Emissores Portugueses. Bands are 10, 15, 20, 40, and 80. It is CW, SSB, or mixed modes.
The GACW WWSA CW DX contest, 15 Zulu June 11th to 15 Zulu June 12th. Organized by the Argentina CW Group, bands 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10, and it's CW only.
And this one is a VHF contest, and it's a big one. It's the ARRL June VHF contest, 1800 Zulu June 11th to 0259 Zulu June 13th. It's organized by the American Radio Relay League. The contest objective for amateurs in the U.S. and Canada and their possessions to work as many amateur radio stations in as many different 2-degree by 1-degree maidenhair grid squares as possible using authorized frequencies above 50 megahertz. Stations outside U.S. and Canada and their possessions may only work stations in the U.S. and its possessions and Canada. So it is all mode, but it'll be anything 6 meters and above. So into the higher range of frequencies, but shorter distance. A couple of rules on this. You can't use repeaters. So if you're using 2 meters, 6 meters, 440, you cannot make the contacts through repeaters. It all has to be on simplex. So it's much more challenging. It's a lot of fun. It's a good way to test out how well your antennas are working for you on VHF and frequencies above by using simplex. You know, you're going to need elevation certainly helps, and you're going to be picking up stations basically line of sight, unless there's some 6 meter skip, and then it could get really interesting.
Actually, that is a great part of it that I often check is the 6 meter activity. If there's some skip happening there, you're going to be in for a lot of really nice faraway stations. It's something to check out.
Yeah, I participated in this a number of years ago. I haven't done it for quite a long time, but I went VHF simplex. And it's really interesting to see just how well your signal can get out sometimes. You know, not a lot of people use 2 meters for simplex, but you can use sideband when you go into simplex as well. It does increase your possibilities. We'll put up the links to all of these contests, in particular this one, the VHF contest for ARRL. There's a lot of different categories, and you can sort of pick the one that works best for you. So always a fun contest for that.
So we are out of time.
We certainly are. We thank you for tuning in. If you have any interesting stories to share with us, pass them along to us either by email, radioreport@yahoo.com, or you can post them up directly on our Facebook group, International Radio Report. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you again next Sunday with our next edition of the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye-bye.
This is the Voice of Mongolia.
Increase.